Hi, thanks for listening to this Around the Corner podcast. Today is Thursday, January 29th, 2009. This is your host, Miguel Gulen. Over the last few years, I have been sensitized to the power of social media, blogs, wikis, podcasts, content management systems, and the ways they enhance how we communicate, collaborate, and help us be more creative together. For many school districts, however, social media is a threat to the very way that they do business. If employees choose to use social media, they often do so at their peril, facing the challenge of overturning misconceptions that have sprung from negative news stories by traditional media such as televisions and newspapers. This audio recording of a presentation delivered at the 2009 TASA Midwinters Conference to administrators caught my eye. It approaches using new media in a proactive way, an attempt to control how media is used. As I listened to this presentation, it occurred to me that this is a mirror of how school districts first begin to try and control social media and manipulate it for their own purposes. At first, I was inclined to dismiss this presentation for exactly that reason, until it occurred to me that this podcast serves as a perfect reflection of the reality of school districts grappling with an issue, however imperfectly. While the presenters have not achieved the pinnacle of social media control, transforming the underlying organization in ways that tap into the full power of social media, I applaud the way that they've been transparent about their efforts. The question I'm left with is, how can we better navigate this process in school organizations? How can we become better organizations that make where social media fits in more naturally? That is, I guess, an organization that is more open and transparent, that is focused on sharing, allowing collaboration, creativity to flourish in ways that public schools don't really allow that to happen.
You're hopefully in the right room. We're going to be talking about the new media, how we can use it in our communication, put it in our tool bag, if you will, our communication tool bag in our school district. And I'm Carrie Hutchison. I'm the communications director in the Comal ISD. And Brad Dimitrovich from Bandera ISD. Something we wanted to throw out there real quick to you. Is your logo part of your marketing? Just something to think about. Wanted to give you an idea of where we're from, the area that we're from. San Antonio, Bexar County area down south. Brad, can you show them? You all know where Bandera is. What is it, the Cowboys?
It's the Cowboy capital of the world.
Of the world.
As you can tell by the way I'm dressed today.
And Comal County, of course, is in the New Braunfels area north of San Antonio. Wanted to share with you a little bit about Comal ISD. Almost 600 square miles in five different counties right there in Central Texas. We're growing at about 5%, average 5% a year, fast-growing school district. Over 2,000 employees now, and more than 16,000 students. Land mass-wise, I love numbers. We're the 100th largest school district in terms of geography. We're the 69th largest in terms of enrollment. It's an exciting place to be right now. And there are demographics, predominantly white. Low SES.
And then we talk about my area, Bandera ISD. It's it's not considerably smaller in mass. It's 400 square miles. And we're much smaller. We have 2,500 students, and we've been pretty consistent for the last couple of years, and that's what our projections estimate for about the next 4 years to be pretty consistent until another growth spurt hits us. When you see things like 400 square miles, I guess you don't realize that. And when we talk to parents who complain that their children have to stay on a bus for an hour every morning, you kind of get a perspective on it. But 400 square miles, we have 32 bus routes, and they drive the equivalent of driving from San Antonio to California and back each and every day out of those 32 bus routes. So they put a lot of miles on our buses. We have 4 campuses, 2 elementary schools, and then 2 support facilities. And our demographics are very similar to Comal's, predominantly white. We've had an increase in the last few years about our SES population increasing a little bit each year.
And now to the meat of what we want to talk with you about today. And if nothing else, obviously, we just want you to take away some ideas, especially when it comes to the new media, some things to think about. And these are not necessarily things that we're doing in our district. We've heard about it. We want to share them with you just to get those wheels turning. And should you be doing them or not in your district? But we can't get there until we talk a little bit about the importance of communication, about the importance of getting your message out to all your parents, patrons, students. When do you get it out? How do you get it out? Things to think about. It gives you a chance to clarify your district goals and objectives, to tell your message, to get your message across. That's the importance. Also, it's a great vehicle, isn't it, to dispel myths and rumors. Again, the timing is everything. And how do you get it out? Is it just electronic? Is it calling a meeting? How do you communicate your message? And we cannot overemphasize, of course, listening and being good listeners and paying attention and caring about people, whether it's over the phone or in person. Did you want to add anything to that, Brian?
No, you're right on track. When you look at some of the traditional communication tools that are out there, and these are the ones that school districts are using continuously. For a lot of school districts, it's a frightening thought to think about this new media and social media, and that's why Carrie and I have started to explore this, and we're certainly not doing a lot of it in Bandera ISD. Carrie's doing a little bit more than I am. There's some districts that are taking it really by the horns, but when you look at a couple of these things that are up here, some of these technologies that have been around for a while are just kind of getting new with school districts too. But as we look at our traditional pieces, because it's important not to forget about the traditional ways to communicate with your audience. And those include, of course, the news releases that need to go out on a consistent basis. However you do your newsletters, internally, externally, out to the public, or just for inside. And, you know, I was born in 1956, so I'm the kind of person that likes to have meetings and telephone calls. I still haven't embraced texting as much as some of my younger counterparts out there. But we know that's the direction that everything is going. The website, if you take a look at a website, and I always like to put up there whether it's an active or a static website. If you could think back the last time you had looked at your own district's website, and as of yesterday, did it still say, "Welcome to the new school year"? It's probably a static website, that it doesn't get updated much. So we kind of take a look at that. Of course, all the other things, committees, invitations, a lot of that personal stuff, and then email messages have really taken off in the last few years.
I think it's important to categorize the traditional communication tools that we are all pretty familiar with as having a limited life and therefore limited relationships. Think about the telephone call that you can make. It's limited. It's that one-on-one phone call. Even your meetings, public meetings that you have. It's a meeting tonight about boundaries, and it's pretty much limited right there in that room. Now, it may take on a life of its own, and they may start communicating in other ways that you're not quite up to date on, like blogging and getting their messages out about how upset they are about some boundary changes in your district. But our typical traditional communication tools, the newsletters, even email messages that we send, we're sending them to a specific group that have a limited life. Our website, again, a traditional tool. Who would have thought, though? How long have we had school websites around now? Has it been a decade yet?
Probably not.
But it's pretty traditional when we throw out some of these other social media tools to you here in a few moments, some of which you may have heard about, maybe some others you haven't.
And your parents that are in the 50s and the 40s, they're looking at those websites now. They're embracing the websites as an information tool, whereas the younger generation have realized it's not as interactive as they want, but the website definitely appeals to those people 35 and older.
High expectations. High expectations your community has for your website to be updated and to be interactive and have a lot of useful information. And you wouldn't believe the number of school district websites that we go to, that we visit, that they're stagnant.
Right.
They haven't changed.
And you might not think, like, you know, for a small area like Bandera ISD with 2,500 students, in our web statistics, our internal hits do not count as a part of our thing. But in the last 12 months, we had 1.2 million visitors to our website from outside of the district. And that's an awful lot for 2,500 student districts. So parents are visiting in certain areas like our parent center and all that stuff, really see a lot.
Okay, so cutting-edge communication tools. How many of these are you all using in your district? From the electronic newsletters to, and we're going to go through some examples here. I won't go into great detail about all these until we show you some of the visuals that go with them. The automated telephone calling in Kamala, we just started that 2 years ago. We've been doing the attendance call that went out every night, but we had never used the feature to be able to call all 16,000 students and get a message to them. And that has made a huge, huge difference. And I think more and more school districts are finally buying into that and using that. And it's a critical tool. Our parents really appreciate it. Of course, the social media tools, blogging, that's what most of us think about as a social media tool. That's a cutting-edge tool. Google Alerts, how many of you all, because we don't have a visual on the Google Alerts later. How many of you all use Google Alerts? And just go to Google, you can indicate and type in the name of your school district. And every day you will get an email in your email box, sometimes more than once a day. It will scan the entire internet looking for Comal ISD, any reference to Comal ISD. So it gives me information on anyone who has mentioned Comal ISD in a blog. It'll give me links to news stories about Comal ISD. I can do that with principal's name, or I can do that with my superintendent's name. I have a lot of Google alerts.
And I set up the same way like Carrie does. Our district, all our school names, our principal's name, our key administrator's name, our superintendent's name. So anytime one of those gets mentioned in anything, and sometimes it's a very old article, but what it happens to do, how Google generates it, is by where it gets placed in their directory. So if something hasn't been looked at for a while, and someone goes searching for it, it pops it up in their directory, and that's when you'll get a Google alert generated. Here is just both Carrie and I, our electronic things, and they're the same, but they're different. Hers is more text-based, and it's kind of done off of the listserv. Mine is an electronic newsletter, which has a little more graphics, but it could also be received as a text-based, too. And I subscribe to Carrie's, too, so I know that she does hers quite often, too. But we try to do ours at least once a week, at least a minimum. Sometimes we'll do it four times a week, sometimes every day. It just depends on what message you have to say. We noticed that we got a better response when we gave shorter messages, just like this one. This was about a student holiday. We got a better response than when we sent stuff that had three or four articles in there that were very long. So we started paying attention and doing a little more brief messages, and we call ours the Bandera ISD News Now. This is some emergency news, too, and Carrie has a little link right off of her homepage for the to take you to emergency news. When we get into a situation at our district that it's going to be weather or there's some other situation we want to follow, we put a red button on our home page, and then which then takes the person to this page, which is our kind of our emergency page. We've got it set up all the time for bad weather, and always gives the information. We use this an awful lot, and I know Carrie and I even talked to each other a couple years ago quite a bit when we had those 3 days of ice storms in January and stuff like that, and that's when our website really got a test, because it was amazing how many people were going there first to the website and to the electronic news versus waiting to hear about it on television.
And as an extension of the emergency news, of course, is that telephone automated system where you can just press one button and it'll go out to everyone. But then we also have an information hotline. It's a 24/7 phone number that people can call, and I can record and keep updated messages on there too for people to call in and just listen to the message to the latest information about whatever it is. So multiple tools. I think in this day and age you have to be thinking that newsletter or that email or that phone call, one thing is not going to take care of it. You have to use multiple communication tools. Podcasts are another example. We just recently started doing these. They're primarily audio. I'm keeping it simple. But our teachers are getting more and more into the visual podcast as well, the video podcast. So I'm being challenged to go that direction too. So I'm to the point of combining PowerPoint presentations with the audio and making them available. And people can subscribe to them and then they download them. When they receive them, and they can download them into their iPods, their MP3 players, or they can just listen to them via the computer. And you have it.
But we don't do a whole lot of it. We don't do a whole lot of it. It's something we kind of are exploring, and I know my superintendent wants to kind of get started with a superintendent's message or something on a monthly basis off of our website.
The good old blog. We have not started a blog in Comelia. I'm right there. I'm right on the edge of getting it going. Again, it's another form of communication for our superintendent or for a senior level staff member. This one came out of South Carolina, and they do allow comments. I know most of the postings were coming from the superintendent, but not too many comments actually were coming back from people. But it is out there. The Kershaw County School District, and a lot of good information. And again, that's something, if you want people to visit it and to stay up on rumors and myths, things that are going on in your district, you'll need to have someone who can maintain that. Pros and cons to blogs. You can have that interaction, or this is the White House blog. Just started under President Obama, just started last week. They immediately put it out there, but you cannot comment. You cannot comment on it. At least I couldn't find it in the brief minute or two that I looked at it. But it's daily, or more than once a day. They are putting information out there that they want the public to know about and be able to read when they get a chance. I think one of the benefits, of course, for a school district to start a blog and still maintain some control over it before you open it up to all the comments that could be posted on the web, is, again, to get your message out, especially about controversial issues, things that are going on in your district. I think it might be healthy to do that.
And when you look at this stuff, this is really no difference than right now a lot of school districts are doing a news release page where they post all their news releases and stuff like that. But this kind of gives it a little personal touch, too, if it comes from a superintendent or a director and things like that. I was talking to someone the other day, and they're asking me when we were going to get ready to do a blog, and we got to talking back and forth, and I said, I know I'd be using social media right now if we were getting ready to do a bond, because I think if you're getting ready to do a bond issue right now, that's just a way to go. And there's so much information that you could get out there with people and interact with people to really get them to truly understand the bonds that you're going to be doing.
We wanted to leave you with some social media terminology. We're not going to read those definitions to you, but you might, and I know you have them in the handout. Cyberbullying, I think as administrators are pretty familiar with cyberbullying and what that means. Blogosphere. What I want to point out on that because you're going to see it here in a little bit with another slide that we have.
The handouts were in the back, sir. I'm sorry if you need one. That was one left over from another thing. So, sorry about that.
The microblogs. Microblogs are also called Twitters, or it's a form of Twittering where you're limited to 140 characters. So that's a microblog that you'll see here in a moment. Real simple syndication. I think most companies now have RSS feeds on their website. We have it on Comal so that you can subscribe to our podcast for free. Wikipedia, who's familiar with that? I think most of us are know that it exists out there, the free encyclopedia. And we can go in and we can edit on the Wikipedia page that we want to. We have permission to go in and we can edit the information that's there. That's the reference to group writing. Texting, familiar with that. Social networking sites. MySpace, LinkedIn, Facebook, through the video cast and podcast, and the difference between the two. Of course, the most famous form of video cast are all those videos that we can look at on YouTube. Now, the different communication tools. MySpace was first, of course. I think that's why they have such a high number of users. Facebook isn't too far behind. There's the reference to Twitter. We'll show you an example here in a little bit. Flickr was a new one for me a few months ago. Flickr? Anyone? Flickr? Photos. It's just, and kids are going crazy posting pictures on Flickr. The Generation Y moms are posting pictures on Flickr. It's just a new thing. You'll see a picture here in a minute. Technorati is similar to Google Alerts. Technorati allows you to monitor the web for key terms for blogs throughout the internet, and you need to go to Technorati, though, but it doesn't alert you like Google alerts you. You have to go in and check on your Technorati account to see if Comal has been mentioned today in places you don't want it mentioned. How many of you all knew TeacherTube existed? Yeah. We know YouTube pretty well, but now TeacherTube, and we'll show you a picture of that here in a minute.
One of the things I guess that probably scares most administrators about the blogging situation is probably from some of the horror stories that we hear about our staff, some staff members using it, or teachers getting in trouble for posting pictures from their vacation at the nudist colony they went to this summer, things like that. But, you know, and that is when I was talking to somebody a couple months ago at a conference we were at, and from a corporate and a business standpoint, people who are bloggers can't understand why education's not hasn't embraced this yet. And once we started talking with him about all the different laws that we have to go and the FERPA laws and everything else and our child laws and everything that we have, it's a lot more difficult for a school district to be open like a corporation or a business is. But so as we're looking at things, you know, do you want to post something that's going to be real controversial? Would it be wise for a superintendent to put something out there that's going to be real controversial? I mean, and then get a whole bunch of replies and then not answer. That probably hurt you more than it helped you embrace the technology whatsoever. One of the things that we go through with our new teacher orientation every year when we talk about this, and this is exactly what, you know, we tell people, you know, who could see your stuff, you know? Your mother's going to see it. Your students could see it out there, and those taxpayers in our community, and we live in a small community, so people know your superintendent, your board president, the editor of the Dallas Morning News could see your stuff, you know? And a story could evolve rather quickly just by a simple web posting.
So unlike the traditional communication tools that we use every day, and we need to continue to use a lot of them. We're not advocating that you drop them. But you need to think about picking up some of the social media tools. And they're good in a way. There's pros and cons because they have an unlimited life, an unlimited relationship. The blog can end up who knows where. Your Twitter messages, the Flickr photos that are out there, they just take on a life of their own sometimes, and you have to weigh that with everything else that you're doing, and what do you want to pursue? What do you have the manpower to pursue? What time?
And even your traditional, you know, some of the traditional things that we put out there before, those could create one of these social media kind of things that gives it an unlimited life and sort of a life on its own. And I'll give you an example. About last March, we had two kids eating in the cafeteria. One kid started choking because he swallowed too much pizza. His little buddy got up next to him, plopped him up, did the Heimlich. Pizza came flying out. All the teachers were amazed. "Where did you learn this?" And the kid looks at us dumbfoundedly and said, "I've been staring at that poster for the past 4 years in line at the cafeteria." Okay? So our local newspaper, a little small local newspaper, 10,000 circulation, picks it up, puts it on their website the next morning, this cute little story. Next thing we know, Channel 4 from San Antonio picks it up. Channel 12 picks it up. CBS picks it up. It's on the CBS morning show. And then by the end of the week, there were 78 news stations in the state of Texas that showed this little clip. And then it was all over the web in certain areas, this little interview with these two kids. And so something that was very traditional with a nice little cute human interest story just barreled and took on a life of its own, which is really kind of cool. But think about that. How if that was something bad that happened? Would you want that? Look at something good went through that quickly. You know that something bad would go through even faster.
And you bring up a good point. We're really having a community conversation now. That's where our society is. What we do, what happens in our schools, can often end up on the internet in some form or fashion. Like Brad's example was a good example with television news stories and the newspaper having a presence on the web. And so a lot of what we're doing today is a community conversation. Everyone wants to participate. And we have to remember, especially as administrators who have been at it for a while, we can't control it anymore. We have to let go and remember that we cannot control that 100%. And we're going to have to participate, and we're going to have to get caught up and realize that the parents that are coming in our doors these days with young children expect the presence on the web and expect the information as best we can give it within the laws that we have to follow. And that's all we have to tell them. We wish we could get into more detail about XYZ, but we're limited by state law, by federal law, by HIPAA, whatever it is. You just need to tell them. Because if we're not telling it, others are telling it for us, and it may not be factual. MySpace, we're pretty familiar with. The media get a lot of stories off of MySpace accounts. They're looking at student accounts, staff accounts on MySpace. They're looking for story ideas, whether they're accurate or not, and they're calling Brad, they're calling me and others. School principals to find out if what they're reading is accurate. Facebook, same thing. Getting story ideas off of there. Have a limited presence on MySpace and Facebook right now. I just kind of monitor. I don't interact a great deal. You haven't done that either, Brad. But it's just that social networking ability to see what is going on out there.
I'm still scared. But I'm 53 years old. I deserve to be scared. Then LinkedIn is another one, and that's really something that, you know, a lot of people are using back and forth in a great way to be in contact with people of similar interest, like with this, with public relations, with communications, things like that. I could network them with other people using the LinkedIn. Tumblr is another one, too. And I kind of like Tumblr because I'm able to just put out messages but not bring anything back in. So it's not a two-way blog. It's more of a one-way that's very easy posting. Another one, another blog spot like that, same way. But I haven't set mine up to answer yet because I'm still not confident in doing that. It's kind of like sticking your toes in water to see how cold it is. You know, I haven't taken the plunge yet all the way.
Very gently. YouTube. We have an example that I think you all are pretty familiar with here in a little bit, so I won't give it away. But this is very, very popular. Need I say any more? fights happening on your campuses are ending up on YouTube. One idea I have is to actually do a short recruiting video on behalf of our district and put it out there on YouTube. Something to think about. I mean, there could be positive uses for YouTube.
And there are some school districts embracing that with recruiting videos and that, and doing a successful job with it, and actually having their students create YouTube videos for teacher, to try to get teachers. What am I saying? Recruiting videos.
And that's probably what's happening in large part on TeacherTube. I haven't explored TeacherTube a whole lot. I just stumbled upon it, actually, not too long ago.
As I've gotten into some of the things on TeacherTube, kind of looking around, too, some of the teachers, when they were on vacation at historical areas and stuff, actually filmed themselves going through different places, too, so as a learning device for it to share it with others. Kind of neat.
This is the YouTube. This is an example of something taking on a life of its own. Remember this? Earlier this school year, the Dallas ISD 10-year-old speaker that kicked off everything as a convocation for the Dallas School District. And, I mean, who knew? I haven't talked to anyone in Dallas ISD. Maybe this was the intent, to put the young man on YouTube. And pretty soon we were all emailing each other the link, right, to listen. And he was so powerful. What great PR for Dallas ISD. And I think, yeah, I don't know if you see it down there, the views underneath his photo on the right. At that point, I forget when I took that snapshot, but 43,000 people had watched it.
Is your school district at Wikipedia? Because ours are, and then you could also join to add information to it if you so desire.
And we can put it on there. It's there. So if you haven't checked your school district's Wikipedia site, we had to correct several things in ours because it's constantly changing and new schools are being added. And I go to it and monitor it to make sure no one else is trying to change it too.
Twitter? I don't Twitter a whole lot, you know. As you can tell, there's nothing Twitterful about my Twitter page. So, and that's just, you know, that's another one of those new things, very short, brief messages back and forth, limited to 140 characters or less, so you can't get into any long dissertations of very short, brief conversations.
It's the microblog, definitely the microblog, because you are limited. There's what Flickr looks like. Photos are going on there left and right, and it's probably a good site to monitor, too, for inappropriate photos that might be posted by your students and staff. Technorati. I told you that's pretty similar to Google Alerts, only you have to go there to see if Comel has shown up. And you can read all kinds of great blogs, too. There's all in one place. You can pretty much access what you want to.
If you look at some of the pros and cons of social media, and one of the first slides that we brought up about the limited relationships and unlimited relationships, it truly is. It expands your boundaries so much than from within your own community. It expands it out. Just kind of like our websites did a few years ago. Now this is the media that people are looking for. They're not just looking for the web for information. They like that social interaction. And Carrie will talk about Gen X and Gen Y.
Yeah. if I can relate to that. I guess I put myself in a Gen X mom role. I use the web. I like to go to it for information. I'm starting to dip my toes into some of the social networking sites. My children, who are 20 and 15, keep encouraging me and pushing me to do some things. Not quite comfortable with posting pictures on the web, that kind of thing. But a Gen X mom, and I gave you an article, one of the handouts from Parenting Magazine, that explains the difference between Gen X and Gen Y. The Gen Y mom wants that interaction. They're going to be posting the photos. They're going to be blogging and talking about their school and about their kids' experiences at the school and about how tough it was to even get their child registered and how rude those people were at that school. They're going to be putting information out there. Those are the parents that are coming into our system now. They're very, very comfortable with the new media, and they want to see it used, and they're using it. Some of the positive experiences. We shared the Dallas ISD experience with you. Brad shared one with you as well from his school district. Galveston ISD. You know what Galveston did during Hurricane Ike? I saw someone presented on that earlier today. And I thought this was really interesting. Lost all power. You know, they couldn't use websites to communicate. Probably couldn't even use an automated telephone system if they had it. So they started using Twitter. And they sent out messages. Remember, 140 spaces is all they have. And they, is anyone from Galveston in here? I want to make sure I get this right. It's just based on what I was reading. They Twittered to their employees to keep them informed about what was happening, when they needed to come back, all that kind of information. But it was mainly used during the height of the storm and a few days after that. So here they use this communication tool to send, it's basically text messages, isn't it? But it's called Twittering. So that's another great use of technology. And you saw the blogging from Kershaw County in South Carolina.
Of course, you probably remember negatives more so than, you know, we see those a lot. The school videos of someone took cell phone videos of the fights that happened. Something that happened on a bus, a teacher losing their cool in classroom. Those are the kind of things that wind up too, and those are the ones that probably have the negative experience of think about a little bit more.
For example, there was a YouTube experience in a school district experience recently. School board member, unbeknownst to himself, had his cell phone on in his pocket while he was conducting a landline conversation with a patron. Well, his cell phone had called an opposing school board member, someone he didn't get along with, but he didn't know that, of course. So he's on the landline talking with a patron and going on and on about school board related stuff. Well, his cell phone had reached the other board member's voicemail. She didn't answer. So she got the whole recording, I guess as long as it would save the message, as he went on and on with this patron on the phone. That conversation, unfortunately, ended up on YouTube, which consequently led to news articles and radio stories. In our communities where it happens, they just take on a life of their own. So that was purely accidental. There's another one, though, that I can think of, a school district on the East Coast. Teachers posted, they weren't pictures. They were racial slurs about where they worked, where they taught. Very, very inappropriate. This school district, it's the Charlotte-Mecklenburg, am I pronouncing it right? School district, if you want to Google them and look them up, they have actually, as a consequence of that, hired a full-time person, and And I think that's where some of the large urban school districts are headed, actually. Maybe some of us that are a little bit smaller someday. A full-time person would do nothing but monitor all of this new social media. Because these teachers, as a result of what they put on their own, I think it was Facebook or MySpace, they ended up losing their jobs. They were just totally inappropriate, unprofessional, unethical comments about their school and where they taught. Which leads me to the blogging policy. How many of you all in your school districts, does anyone have a blogging policy for their employees? Do you?
No.
You don't. Larger district, are you from a larger district? Yeah.
Denton.
Yeah. I think all of us need to start looking at that. That's why I made you a copy of, and maybe we can call on Denton if you want to share theirs with you. There's an example from the Pennsylvania State Association or something. It's a separate handout.
It's a separate handout. There's something
they're in the
back.
There's
back
plenty of them. Just something to get us thinking, because I think we all need to have something in place. And we may want to include, does yours only include blogging?
No, it's a full depth breadth of acceptable use of video or YouTube. Just kind of basically moralistic. You know, teachers coming in don't get it.
They don't. And it's unfortunate that we have to put it in black and white for them.
Yeah.
But we do, to cover ourselves.
We have a video they watch.
As well.
On how to act and what to do.
Was it created as a result of issues that you had, or were you able to get ahead of the curve and be real proactive?
We were ahead.
Good. Good. I think we can all learn from that and be prepared for it. Emergency situation.
We kind of talked about that using our email things, but as Carrie mentioned, the example from Galveston, I mean, that's once Hurricane Ike got finished, and, you know, we weren't affected by it at all at Bandera. We didn't even get 4 drops of rain. But it really got us thinking about when I was trying to contact some of my friends in the Houston area at schools and stuff like that. It kind of got us thinking about having that redundancy within your communication system. And, you know, we've got our web servers hosted right there at our school district, and we've got backups and backups and backups. But if the electricity goes down and is down for more than 6 hours, we don't have a website anymore. So, yeah, we looked at and purchased off-location hosting packages for things like that. Also, to use we'll keep it for our electronic news thing, a company called Constant Contact, which, you know, has redundancy over and over and over again, and they're located, it's a subscription that we pay for, and we would be able to use that in an emergency situation too. So it's just kind of you got to get thinking ahead of the curve on what would happen if you lost power, what would happen if, you know, that hurricane came through again. So there's a lot of things that these social media tools that we could utilize for that to set up.
You want to mention the Teespring?
Yes, we also have, Carrie and I, I'm currently the president of the Texas School Public Relations Association, and Carrie's the past president, and I invite you down to our booth. If you haven't been to our booth, it's right as you come in to the whole registration area. We're to the left side of the registration area. We've got a lot of examples of some of the traditional media tools out there for you to pick up and take. Some of our members have shared with us, too. But if you'd like to explore more about social media, we have our conference in February, and if you drop your business card in, we're giving away a free registration to our conference in San Antonio. There's going to be a lot of social media people there presenting this topic during our session, so if you want to find out some more about that. And there's our links, too, for Bandera ISD and for Kelton Mountain ISD, too.
And if you have any questions or wanted to share anything that you have experienced, we're certainly open to that. Or...
social media
tools used to.
In what context? Well, we also have social issues.
Right. Of course, a lot of this is not accessible, should not be accessible at the school level, or school district level, for them to access.
But if you're using it at a district level, and it links off your website, and then you have it blocked within the district.
Yeah. I mean, you have to think through all of that because you obviously, again, I don't think I would make it accessible at the school level, school district level. I don't think I would, many of these tools. Make it accessible mainly for your parents. For your parents to be able to access.
So how do your parents access?
At home.
I know, but you can work on your website. And if not, how do you get the information?
Well, I think using multiple tools. She's asking how it all works. You know, do you have to have links on your school district website in order to get to Flickr or to any of the other social media that you use? And I don't think I would advocate for that. Now, if you create your own blog for the school district, that would be a link right off of your website. But you're controlling that blog. And you're controlling, if you do allow input, you do allow posts to your blog, they are typically screened. People can type in, I'm sure a lot of us blog, right? And they can hit submit, but submit doesn't mean it's automatically going to appear on school district's blog. It does need to be screened because they could be putting in students' names, ages, what school they attend. They could be giving a lot of private information that you need to take out or not even post their response to it. But no, I would think about using those social media tools primarily for your parents to get information. And if it's an employee doing it at work, I think that person is going to have access to do that. All under the guise, of course, in the supervision. I mean, someone has authorized it in order to get it out there. But I don't think you want to get into having anybody in the school district be able to access it during school hours. I think you're going to have to use other communication tools. Remember how I said you can't use just one or two in order to make sure your staff, your students, and your parents all have the information. That you need. Does that help you think through that? There are a lot of questions about this and how to implement it appropriately. Anything else? Any other questions or thoughts?
You talked about the access point in that, and I know because when we were talking about putting our a district Tumblr page out there, and it's blocked from our current filtering system, but the technology director just said when we're ready to do it, that could be one of those links that it's open up so people on the inside could even see it as well. So it's one of those things that just has to be a working relationship with your technology department.
Yeah. Talk about it. Yes, sir.
I'm just going to tell you that the video I mentioned is on our website. It's on denvermsd.org and some of your four staff. It's called Be Professional.
Good. Thank you. Yes, sir.
I do know the system, but my current district doesn't use it, but it's a system that parents can subscribe to, free charge, and if we did have something like a school call where your superintendent sits there and puts out a message on the computer, and it automatically does a text message to every parent that's in that system.
Yes. Did you all hear it? There's that texting feature, too, for a lot of the telephone automated calls. I know the system we use, we can do the texting too. We haven't gotten there yet. But texting is a good way to get your emergency information out as well. That's right. Again, he's limited probably 140 spaces. It's usually a real succinct message. And you can always send them to someplace else to get more information if they need it. Listen to your local radio or listen to watch television or whatever. If they need to get more information. Anything else? Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Around the Corner podcast. You can find Around the Corner at www.mguhlin.org.